Hello and welcome to the Hoop Collective podcast. We are in Los Angeles. Moments ago, we did the Jump with Rachel Nichols. Is that the official title of the show?
It is not.
It's just The Jump, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, the official title of this show, though, as I've heard Andrew say, how many times?
Five. People told me to stop doing it. I don't know why.
I'm going to replace. Don't say with, because that way we can replace them much easier.
The Hoop Collective. Yes. With Brian Windhorst.
Yes. We've totally stopped saying subscribe, rate, and review because I think it's stupid, even though it's really important.
Also, people didn't want to hear Brian say he doesn't subscribe to his own podcast.
Which
anymore.
I do not.
Right.
I think it's a stupid way to... There's got to be a better metric in 2019.
I just realized, Rachel, that you were setting me up to say Brian Windhorst and the Hoop Collective.
Yes.
And I totally missed that.
That's
I'm so sorry.
What you need from a producer, what I want from a producer is, cutting edge.
On it. He's on it. I want this to be a visual podcast today because I think the world needs to know about Andrew's pants. Can you share with him?
Andrew is wearing, there was a discussion about this earlier. One of our bosses here, Hillary Guy, said that they were called Millennium Pink was the name of the pants. I believe they are salmon.
Hmm.
What would you say?
I think they're pretty pink. Salmon's a little more orangey.
Okay.
Right? I think, though, with so much Masters talk this past weekend, you could just go play golf in those pants. You'd be fine.
He is a fashion plate around here. Would we agree?
He's something around here.
Yeah. Occasionally, he just shows up in a bear suit. And if you think I'm lying,
that's completely accurate.
In the winter, when it gets a little cold, he wears a bear suit. Rachel, I'd like to send everyone to your Instagram.
Okay.
To look at the cake that you baked.
Oh, boy. I thought you were talking about the Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum interview.
Too. Which was very good.
Thank you.
Because it's not that you host five shows a week. You also, show up in Miami, do interviews, show up in Portland. I'm like, when did those interviews happen? Did you see the cake that she baked, Andrew?
Andrew's like, I don't have Instagram.
You made a Harry Potter cake.
I did. I will say this. You have turned into my biggest supporter, and I'm so grateful for it. I mentioned that on Instagram this weekend.
I don't want to talk too much about it because we talk about the NBA. Please find this cake, and you'll have a new respect for Rachel. And it's video evidence that she did it.
Because?
I didn't accuse. I take umbrage with that, but we don't want to talk about that right now. But not only on the video evidence, you can see your bandaged hand as you recover from an injury.
Yes.
Not ready for the playoffs. You always say you're ready for the playoffs.
I know, man.
Could be off the playoffs.
I have a doctor's appointment tomorrow.
Okay.
So, listeners of this podcast, watch TV this week on The Jump. If you see that stupid air cast thing, whatever it's called, come off, you will know the doctor's appointment went well. If it is still on, you will know it did not go well.
All right. Okay. So,
let's talk about the NBA, Brian.
Yes, we have the playoffs are here. We had upset Saturday. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to get riled up. Like I think there's going to be upset Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. I'm not sure if I buy it. Do you buy upset Saturday as being the start of a thing?
Do I think it actually happened? I do believe it happened. Do I buy it? I
mean, well, in this day and age, sometimes you have
sometimes,
to wonder.
Sometimes, right. What is the truthiness of that truth? I mean, look, I think over the weekend, Micah posted on Twitter, right, that there hasn't been chalk with all the top seeds advancing out of the first round since 2008.
That's Micah Adams.
Sorry, our esteemed friend, late of ESPN, that's now right. of NBA.com, but one of our good, most solid NBA voices we have on NBA Twitter, say that, you can't expect things to go chalk. Like, they rarely go chalk. So I'm not shocked that things aren't going chalk. I did think it was interesting, though. I didn't expect the Raptors to lose to the Magic. I'm happy to say that. Yikes. And I'm impressed with the Magic for doing what they did. And look, the Joel Embiid thing, we talked about it in the 2-3 weeks leading up to the playoffs. How bad is that injury? Are they holding him out as a precaution? So he's great at the start of the playoffs, or are they holding him out because they needed to hold him out because he was recovering? And I think we got a little bit of that answer. And of all the sort of hoopla around that Philadelphia Nets game, and all credit to the Nets, who clearly were ready from the jump to take advantage and were not scared and all of that. And Ben Simmons didn't play well and this, that, and the other, and the cell phone. Here's the deal. Joel Embiid did not play Joel Embiid playoff basketball. And if he's not doing that, they are vulnerable. And that is the end of the story.
Yeah. So, he put out that thing on Instagram over the weekend where he plotted their course. Like, he showed.
He's done this before, remember?
Yes. Like, in the first round, obviously, against the Nets. He decided the second round was going to be against the Raptors. He decided the Celtics were going to be in the third round, maybe because the Bucks just gave it to him. He didn't want to remind everybody of that. And then he had himself going up against the Warriors in four different frames on Instagram. Now, that's cool and everything, but if you were not feeling at your best... I mean, I know he doesn't lack for confidence.
Well, he has told me, I've done a few interviews with him where he has made the point that he, quote, trash talks as a way of setting a goal for himself.
Okay.
That if he feels he puts it out there, he feels more of a responsibility to live up to that. So it doesn't surprise me if he was injured or a little doubtful. He wanted to put that peg out there for him to reach.
Let me give you something else from someone who's really smart on Twitter, Kevin Pelton.
Mm-hmm.
And before I even say this, I realize we're talking about one game samples. I'm not trying to make a freak out, but I just want to point something out. Winning teams over the weekend shot 41% on threes. Losing teams shot 25% on threes. By the way, they almost took the exact same number, so it wasn't even like it's that. The team that made more threes won every game. The team that shot a higher percentage on threes won every game. I know this is not breaking news that the three-point shot is important. At this time, I would like to take us back to Summer League last year when Magic Johnson, after signing a bunch of non-shooters.
20 minutes. Did 20 minutes on why you don't need a bunch of shooting?
Three-point shooting is really important.
It is, but it also sort of explains, it's not just OG breaking news, it's really important. It explains sort of the risk with it, right? There's a reason for decades in the NBA, even after, what year was the three-point shot legislated in?
83.
Okay.
Andrew Hahn is looking it up.
How long till we felt like we had the real three-point revolution? 2 decades? 2.5 decades?
I remember going to the games in the 80s, and I remember...
I wasn't talking about the 80s. I'm talking about the zeros, right?
Oh, right, right.
Talking
right.
about the, like,
I was
still...
going to the games in the 80s, and three-pointers were kind of like home runs in baseball.
Right.
Maybe you saw five, maybe you saw three, you know, like, so they weren't that prevalent.
The reason... they weren't put into effect that much is that they were not considered high percentage shot. And chucking up a bunch of threes, if you're not making them, is not as reliable
right.
as actually making the baskets that are closer to the basket. Because yes, three is more than two, but two is more than zero. So that is the flip side of the three-point revolution. If you're Golden State, if you're Houston, if you're Milwaukee, if you're one of these teams that hits your threes, yeah, no joke, that's the better way to go. Three is more than two. But when you have a bad shooting night, when you are still attempting as much as you would be in this time of three-point NBA land, but not making them, you can fall on your face worse.
1979.
Okay. So 79.
I believe Chris Ford hit the first three-point.
You believe from Wikipedia or Basketball Reference?
Even though I did look with Wikipedia, I was going from memory. I could be wrong. Yes, because you know the Warriors actually take, they're a low-volume three-point shooting mm-hmm. team. They don't take that many. The Spurs are like last in attempts.
Yes.
But they're like first or second in percentage.
In mix, right.
Whereas the Lakers, I'm sorry to keep bringing this up. What do you want me to do? The Lakers are last in percentage and last in attempts. They're both.
But the Spurs approach, I think, is really looking at it the smart way, which is, again, three is more than two, but two is more than zero. If you have guys like DeMar DeRozan, like LaMarcus Aldridge, who are not comfortable being three-point shooters, instead of saying to them, you have to, like they do in Houston, you got to take the three no matter what all the time. We don't believe in the mid-range jumper here. Pop basically tells them, take the shots. You're comfortable with taking them, but please try to come out a little bit more often.
Please leave a message after the tone.
You know that feeling after your team has won a really big game? That sense of satisfaction, that sense that everything is going to be okay. Well, you know what also feels great? Paying off high interest credit cards, getting a lower rate on those credit cards, and that all comes with saving money. With Lightstream, you can refinance your credit card balances and save with a credit card consolidation loan. Get a loan from $5,000 to $100,000, and there's no fees. You can even get your money as soon as the day you apply. Plus, Lightstream is a division of SunTrust Bank, one of the nation's largest financial institutions, so you can have complete peace of mind. Get a fixed rate as low as 6.14% APR with AutoPay. Want to save even more? My listeners get an additional interest rate discount. The only way to get it is to go to lightstream.com/hoop. That's Lightstream, L-I-G-H-T-S-T-R-E-A-M.com/hoop.
Subject credit to approval rate includes 0.50% auto pay discount. Terms and conditions apply and offers are subject to change without notice. Visit lightstreet.com/shoot for more information.
Who should be most worried right now out there? I mean, like, obviously the Pistons should be really worried.
I was going to say, are we? Yeah.
But like, is Denver, like, should Denver be really worried? Should OKC
be really worried? You're talking about a team that they themselves expect to advance, or we all expect them to advance, that might not. Is that?
And like, see, to me,
how delicate can we phrase this, right?
Toronto, the way that game played out, I don't think Toronto should be like five alarm fire.
Right. I agree with you.
Some things didn't go their way. Execution on the stretch, you know, the Magic should hit a lot of shots. I mean, you got to get Kyle Lowry playing better, but, you know, is there a team out there you're like, wow, this could really happen? Denver, maybe?
Yeah, I mean, look, again, I need to know what Joel Embiid's knee is going to do. Yeah. If Joel Embiid is not
healthy, that would be a pretty gigantic upset.
It would be, but okay, but if, I mean, look, that's how upsets happen, right? People say, oh, what's the best chance of beating the Warriors if Steph Curry slips, like, right, on the floor and twists his knee? Right. Like, I mean, that's a truism for other teams, too. Right. Joel Embiid is not able to play in a couple of these games, or if he is, but is a shell of himself. I am worried about the 76ers. Wouldn't you be?
The stars, like Paul George, mm-hmm. we don't know, mm-hmm. not shaky. Embiid, shaky, we don't know. Blake Griffin,
out.
I mean, they're not winning that series even with him in, but they have no chance when he doesn't play. Like, you don't have your stars.
Yeah.
I mean,
Paul George, I'm interested to see what happens, because he told Royce Young the night of the game, I don't know when everybody would be listening to this in their cars at double speed, but he told Royce Young the night of the game, 4 days ago, I couldn't lift my hand and arm over my shoulder. I couldn't lift it over my head. And then he told reporters the day after the game, I have pain free. So maybe it's just been a really quick recovery, but I'm curious to see which is the truth. And look, I mean, it's the playoffs, right? There's some gamesmanship. I'm fine, but I am curious to see what happens. You got a team that he's, when you say, oh, how's the shooting on the Oklahoma City Thunder? It's kind of, the answer is, well, I don't know. How's Paul George?
That's right.
Right? Because you're not getting it from other places.
Is Portland supposed to be the underdog in this situation? I feel like everyone picked OKC to win despite them being the lower seed.
Well, I was in Portland this weekend, and it is amazing because here they are once again. They're the 3 seed, just like last year.
Which is a real accomplishment. I mean, I know it doesn't get you a series up 1-0, but you get number 3 in the West, you've done something.
Yep. And then, what? Yes, you're also number 3 in the West?
No, this guy picked him to have home court.
This guy? This guy, right here.
Well, are you going to extend your pick? Are you picking him to win the series? Or?
No one asked me, so I don't
know. Okay, well, I just asked you.
And? What do you got, pink pants over there? No? Nothing? Nothing? And yes, there they are, the 3 seed again, just like last year, facing a very dangerous 6 seed again, just like last year. And Vegas picked against them. Vegas picked the Thunder. So obviously, I always make the point, when you're gambling odds, it's where Vegas thinks the money is coming in, not who they think is going to win. But still, it's indicative kind of where everyone's head is at. And they're aware of all of that. And they're aware they've been swept out of the playoffs the last 2 years. Obviously, Golden State's different. When you run into them, it's a different story. But
yeah, Portland feels to me, because I was up there last year in the playoffs, there's a little bit of Toronto-esque vibe, where they feel like they're not respected.
Yes.
They're like, we accomplished this, we have these great players, and nobody respects us. And I'm like, yes, but you guys keep getting knocked out of the playoffs, like, poorly.
They're trying, Jennifer.
That's exactly what I was going to say. I was going to say, hence, win a playoff game and playoff series and multiple. Did she tell him to win a playoff game or a playoff series?
We did research last night. It was a game.
It was a game. All right.
And the Blazers Twitter feed.
Yes.
We had a comment for Jennifer.
Yeah.
Yes. And by the way, she tweeted back. She said, you're welcome, Portland. So good for her.
Right. So I just feel like I know that Dame plays the disrespect card, and he is an awesome player. And the shots that he hit in game one. I mean, I was sitting in the airport getting ready to fly out here, watching the game on Watch ESPN on my phone with my headphones in, just sitting in the airport. Half the airport is delayed because there was weather yesterday in Chicago, which messed everything up. And he takes that shot, and my head snapped back, and I just like exclaimed, which I never do. I was so impressed with that shot. And I think
this is like a Ralph Lawler type exclamation. Oh me, oh my. What did you
mean? It was just like, ugh, you know, like, They might have sent people over to make sure I was okay because I was so impressed with that shot. Like, Dame is awesome. But, like,
he's on my MVP ballot, Brian.
Interesting that you say that.
But he's not on yours.
He was on my second team All-NBA.
Mm-hmm.
So, generally, my first team All-NBA, unless there's some unusual circumstances, is my ballot.
Mm-hmm.
Joel Embiid was on my ballot.
Mm-hmm.
Steph Curry was on my ballot.
Mm-hmm.
He was fifth on my ballot, mm-hmm. as he was on my first team All-NBA. And I don't think that saying that Damian Lillard is the third best guard in the NBA is an insult. I think that's an appropriate place to put him.
Not at all. I do think, I mean, absolutely not. And that's where he is on my All-NBA team as well. I do think, though, that MVP and All-NBA are two different things. I think that we don't have, I mean, look, I'm not going to do my entire speech for you, but the fact that we don't have.
We're all aware of this speech.
But no, but that we don't have any way of saying this is the best player in the NBA. We still haven't fixed that. And even All-NBA isn't really a way to say here's the best 15 players in the NBA because they still make us do it by position,
that's right.
Which is something that needs to be reformed as well. So All-NBA is at least closer to, okay, who are the best players in the league? Whereas MVP is supposed to be a little bit more about value. And as much as I love, you know, we talked about our ballots and Steph Curry this year is not on, he's on your MVP ballot.
Yeah.
He is not on mine. I think Steph Curry is like no question one of the top players in the league. And he is on my first team All-NBA while Damian Lillard is not. But his value is diminished on a team with other players who are so exceptional. If he misses games, they don't play quite the same with Steph. We've looked at all of those comps. They still win games, right? If Damian Lillard's off that team, they don't win. And especially when Nurk went down and CJ wasn't playing for that long stretch.
It is a very compelling point, especially since when I had to make my mind up on the third team All-NBA guards, which mm-hmm. was a super duper duper important vote. I went with Bradley Beal and Russell Westbrook because the ask of them on a nightly basis is so big. Versus like, because I really wanted to put Clay on there.
Mm-hmm.
But comparing what Clay does every night to comparing what Russ does every night, not comparable. So best I can say is your point is well taken. And but again, putting, you know, Kevin Dame sixth in my mind versus fifth, it's not meant to be an insult. But at the end of the day, this is a great opportunity for Portland. They are playing a team that is weakened. Paul George is weakened.
We'll see. He looked weakened in game one.
Okay.
I am curious to see what happens.
I said this on the jump. I couldn't believe how much tape was on his shoulders. I went back and looked at the last game he played,
right.
And the one shoulder didn't have tape on. And who knows? Maybe this is a gamesmanship.
Yeah.
I don't know what they're doing.
Well, I told you, didn't Russ go through one postseason where there was more tape on his shoulder every day, every game?
Russ,
and it was like
knows?
Spider-Man, basically. Right. He could have done the Spider-Man costume with the tape on his shoulder.
He was 4-15 3-on-3s in game one. Paul George was. Maybe that's a one-game, one-off. Maybe it's because his shoulder's hurting. But Portland has a window here. They are ahead in this series 1-0. They have home court advantage. Even though they lost Nurkic in the first game, Cantor was able to be very effective. In the second round, they're either going to face Denver, who will have just accomplished their greatest accomplishment in like 7 or 8 years mm-hmm. since they had that 50-win team, I think, with George Karl. Or they're facing San Antonio, who's the 7 seed for a reason. I would think they would have, if they get through the series, they would have a chance there. Like, they have a reasonable path to get to the conference finals, which would be amazing for them. So this is a big moment. And this is an opportunity for Damian, and he's already delivered in game one. This is an opportunity to raise your game and to take everybody like me who doesn't have you on first team All-NBA and doesn't have you on your MVP ballot to say, I belong here.
I just think it's interesting because it was pretty clear they were trying to get Utah on that final night of the season. And I guess the idea was, hey, let's get what they thought was a more favorable first round matchup. And we'll worry about the second round when we get there.
Right.
But that would have put them in Golden State's bracket in the second round. Whereas now, as you say, if they can get out of the first, they have a more clear path.
Let's just have real talk. We were at ESPN incredibly interested in that game. Because we have the Western Conference Finals.
Yes.
And the Western Conference Finals last year went 7 games, Houston-Golden State. Houston-Golden State is expected to potentially be the best series that we have this year. Maybe mm-hmm. it won't be.
Yeah.
So we were incredibly interested in that game.
And having and
when,
them
when,
not
when
be
we
on the same
saw
side of the bracket.
That Portland was going to play 6 guys,
mm-hmm.
and they got behind. They gave up like almost 80 points in the first half. They were playing like a soft zone, which is like no defense.
So the Salt Lake Tribune took the circumstances of the last two nights of the regular season, who was up in which games, the last second shots that happened where Paul George hit that buzzer beater against Houston, where Mo Harkless hit the buzzer beater against the Lakers, took all of that into account and said that the seedings going the way they were, where Utah is now playing Houston in the first round, was one, a chance of one in nearly 900,000. And they noted, of course, that getting struck by lightning, your chances are one in 700,000. So there you go.
Right. I mean, by the way, Utah would have had its hands full no matter what, probably.
Portland would have had his hands full no matter what, too.
And Utah. Right? But yeah, mm-hmm. Obviously, the Thunder were 4-0 against the Blazers during the regular season. Mm-hmm. And not that that carries over, mm-hmm. but it is not an ideal situation. But if they win this series, the amount of momentum that they potentially could have would be amazing. And since Houston is not on their side of the bracket,
mm-hmm. Or the Warriors.
They are in a great spot.
Please leave a message after the tone.
Basketball season is in full swing. This is when things get interesting and the true contenders start to outperform the rest, especially if you can hit a three-pointer under pressure in a playoff game, which we've seen a lot already and we will see a lot more. And when you leave that game, and wherever you're driving your family and friends this playoff season, you should make sure your car has the right tires to get you there safely. Goodyear knows that performance is everything, whether it's on the road or on the court. So when it comes to choosing tires, let Goodyear.com help you choose what's best. That's Goodyear, more driven.
Brian, what happens if Oklahoma City loses in the first round after all of the hubbub of re-signing Paul George and all of that stuff going into the season?
They've also already extended Billy Donovan's contract, which wouldn't necessarily mean anything. But to me, I think they had the highest payroll in the league. Depends on, you know, like Miami was way up there if you still count Chris Bosh, but because Bosh is finally coming off the books.
Right.
Didn't count on their books, but they still have to pay him. To spend that kind of money and get knocked out in the first round, not what the doctor ordered for Oklahoma City.
Right. What do you feel is an appropriate goal for Oklahoma City as a franchise?
A puncher's chance in the playoffs every year. Not right now because of Golden State, but things could change. And look, whoever wins this Portland, I really do believe, and I'm trying not to be dismissive to Denver, but I can't help it. I've been being this way for weeks, and I will just put game one as my evidence. I mean, again, Denver could win 4-1 and shove it back in my face, but the winner of this series will have a great opportunity to get to the conference finals.
Do you believe that Denver's going to win the series? The current series against the Spurs?
I'm really shaky because Denver is not a good road team, and now they're going to have to win a game on the road, at least one. And they doubled the hell out of Jokic. And this is my thing. If you've listened to this podcast, you've heard me say it. As great as Jokic is, he is easier to neutralize than James Harden, for example. Like, sure. We just saw Utah,
yeah,
one of the best defensive teams in the league, take the wraps off this funky defense where they were going to force him right every time and come up on his back so he can't step back and everything. And he beat him anyway. Jokic is easier to neutralize. He's not Shaq in his prime, where you have two guys on him, he just dunk over you, and they threw double teams at him, and they're going to throw more double teams at him, and he gets frustrated with the officials, and San Antonio has, you know, veteran leadership. They play very calmly. I could see it happening. And even if they don't, I think Denver is vulnerable, just period vulnerable. So this Oklahoma City-Portland series, to me, is the series of the first round. Although, let's see what happens tonight. Tonight's a big night in Philadelphia, Rachel.
Yep.
because if the Sixers storm back and win, okay. But this series sets up a whole lot of stuff, as Andrew has mentioned. Portland wins this series. They have a great chance to get to the conference finals. It's affirming. They come back. It may even affect whether they get sold right now or not.
Sure.
Jason Quick from The Athletic had a very, very brief interview with Jody Allen, Paul Allen's sister, who attended her first game. This is what Jason wrote. Like, she was sitting next to Bert Colby, who is Paul's longtime friend, mm-hmm. who he said he was explaining the game to her. He was going over strategy with her.
It's just an amazing thing. And obviously, I mean, this is how ownership works. This is what happens. But you could have someone who is currently the owner of an NBA franchise who had never been to an NBA game.
I don't know if she'd been to a game. She hadn't been to a game this year.
Okay.
And he got a brief interview with her and she just said nice things. But
right.
Jason posited this, and I can't say this is incorrect. Her sitting there, seeing the excitement level when it was a super exciting
game. Sure, yeah.
And what it, you know,
and the win and the people in the city, like, and everything, yeah.
May affect it, whether how she wants to proceed with the sale of the team. I don't know her. She's never given an interview about the Blazers. I don't know how she feels, but this is a real thing. Mm-hmm. And if they make the conference finals this year, maybe it affects, like, I mean, they're not moving. You know, not like she's going to sell the team to somebody who would move it, but if you sell the team, who knows what the new owner thinks? Who knows, you know, if there's changes? Like, I don't want to put too much on this, but there's a lot going on in this series. And they get to if they somehow figure out a way to get to the conference finals, it changes the entire conversation around their team.
Yeah. And same for the Oklahoma City.
Right.
There's a lot there. Of course, there's a bunch of other teams that also think they're going to be in the conference finals. So we'll see.
Well, the Denver fans are just cursing my name right now. I'm sorry.
We should all be so lucky that going to a game would influence a $1 billion decision in any of our lives.
Well, nobody knows the Blazers better than Jason Quick.
Yes.
And he was just saying there's so much uncertainty that her being at a game and feeling it and feeling what it's like there could impact how she feels about the franchise.
Brian, you talked about this a little bit before, but it's a big night for Philadelphia. What happens to that franchise if they go out in the first round?
And when I watched that game the other day, I couldn't believe how the Nets just controlled it from start to finish. And maybe not the very start. Embiid had a good, like, first 2 minutes. I recognize what the Nets are. I just don't see them as a team that can beat. I just didn't see that. I didn't see them having games like that.
I just think it's amazing. Wait, the larger point I believe you're getting at is how does this affect then the dominoes of the next few months? I do think it is amazing that we look at the Eastern Conference. You have at least three teams and kind of four, although the Bucks seem to be sort of shaping into form what their plan is. We can already see what their plan is for this summer and they already re-signed Bledsoe. But you can see three teams. There's going to be a huge ripple effect off what happens in that second round. So if in fact, right, Boston does advance through the Pacers, we've seen them win game one, they play Milwaukee in the next round. They will not be favored in that series.
No, Milwaukee will be favored whoever they play in the East the rest of the year is my spot.
Right, and I know the playoffs passed between those two and everything, but Giannis Antetokounmpo is a different player this year.
You're telling me.
And then in Toronto, of course, playing what? Possibly Philly, maybe Brooklyn. And obviously there's no disrespect to the Magic who have won game one,
right.
But look, Toronto loses in the first round to the Magic. I don't see Kawhi Leonard staying there. And even in the second round to whoever, if they make it to the second round to Brooklyn or Philly, that would have a huge impact on their free agency in their summer and the trade that they made for Kawhi. You've got Philly that's going to have to make decisions with Tobias Harris. They're going to have to make decisions with Jimmy Butler. What about the contract? Don't they have other issues? J.J. Redick. But isn't there something with the Ben Simmons contract too, or am I miss?
Yes, he is eligible for an extension this fall. They wouldn't kick in next year, but I'm sure he's going to ask for it.
Sure.
And I mean, if he's your guy, you're going to have to sign him to it.
Yeah. I mean, they're the team that gave it to Joel Embiid even when he was coming off an injury season.
That's right.
So the history there is that they would give it to him.
I wrote a piece last week saying that, and actually Andrew had the idea for this piece, that this is the playoffs of anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
Even though I know the anxiety term is a little bit more all-encompassing, but just, you know, Toronto loses a game, okay? Boy, we're down 1-0. But then what you just said, what happens if we lose this series?
Yep.
It's not just this season's in jeopardy, like your franchise direction is in jeopardy. Same with Boston. Like, Kyrie, Rachel, Kyrie is a strange dude. He wins. They win game one. He played okay. He kind of took over in the second half.
I really enjoy covering Kyrie Irving. You know this.
He runs over to his family after winning game one. In the same vein, Tiger ran over to his family after winning the Masters. He's celebrating with his dad. Like, hey, and I'm all for it.
It's his first playoff win in Boston Garden.
Yeah.
Let him have his moment.
He won the finals and he was angry. I mean, he won the finals. His father and sister came out to hug him and he was angry. He was mad in that moment. And then when he got to the locker room, while his teammates were celebrating, he FaceTimed Kobe. This is a strange man. Hell of a player, strange man. But again, like, if they make a run, even though his fit there is strange and he's sending all these weird vibes, if they make a run, I could see him just being really excited and re-upping. Maybe for 1 year. But I could see it. So, as you said, pressure.
If they get knocked out in the second round, what would you put the odds on Kyrie staying in Boston at?
50-50 at best.
Probably is that high? High?
I'm protecting myself a little bit there so I don't get aggregated. But
that should be the name of your next book. We discussed, by the way, coming in here, that the name of my autobiography that I will never write is I Didn't Know I Had That Meeting, because right. That's basically what I walk around saying, right. Oh, wait, I'm sorry, I'm going to be 15 minutes late. I didn't know I had to go to a meeting first. Right. The name of your book is going to be, I know you've written several, including one, On Stands Now,
yes,
LeBron Inc., but that your autobiography should be I Don't Want to Be Aggregated.
Right. Don't aggregate it. Or just aggregated.
Aggregated?
Aggregated, colon, the Brian Windhorst story.
The Brian Windhorst story. Pink Pants, the Andrew Hahn story.
Yes, that's good. Yes, well, at the end of the day, no matter how they play in the first round, whether they all win the rest of their games, somebody between Boston, two of Boston, Toronto, Philly, and Milwaukee, two of those guys are going home.
Yep.
And two of them are having serious pressure because, you know, Brett Brown, Josh Harris was given an opportunity. He did an interview this week before. Mm-hmm. The playoffs, he was given an opportunity to, like, give Brett Brown a attaboy, and he sort of took the middle path, like a neutral path there. Mm-hmm. If the Sixers lose in the first round series, I think Brett Brown's getting fired. We even not even knowing what happens in the series. Here's something else. The guy who showed up in game one, and the guy who was standing there encouraging everybody at the end of the game, and the guy who was strongest in the locker room was Jimmy Butler.
Yep.
And Jimmy Butler, amongst those free agents, is the guy I think is least likely to be back. I think it's hard to give him, with his health history, a 4 or 5 year contract and with his numbers. But look at him in the playoffs. Like, how do you judge if Ben Simmons is shaky, Embiid has shaky health, and you're already going to be like, you know, are we going to invest $300 million in this team, but then let Jimmy go? Or are we going to have to invest $400 million to protect the other $300 million because we need Jimmy?
Please leave a message after the tone.
You know that feeling that you get when your team has just won a big game? The release of that pressure, the feeling of satisfaction? Well, you can get that feeling by paying off your credit cards. You can refinance your credit card balances and save with a credit card consolidation loan from MightStream. You can even get your money as soon as the day you apply. The loans can go from $5,000 to $100,000, and there's no fees. Plus, LightStream is a division of SunTrust Bank, one of the nation's largest financial institutions, so you can have complete peace of mind. Get a fixed rate as low as 6.14% APR with AutoPay. Want to save even more? My listeners get an additional interest rate discount. The only way to get it is to go to lightstream.com/hoop. That's LightStream, LightStream.com/hoop.
Subject credit to approval rate includes 0.50% auto pay discount. Terms and conditions apply and offer system can change without notice. Visit lightstreet.com/hoop for more information.
Can I make a brief aside here, not so that Rachel can fully relitigate her point about best player versus best season?
Oh, boy.
I mean, you could do that. I'd be happy to.
I was thinking the other day, though, that one way to solve that is instead of just having a finals MVP, if you had a postseason MVP.
A playoff MVP.
Right. That would solve a lot of
the problems. Isn't that what it is in the NHL? I'm sorry. Yes. I'm a former hockey writer, and I'm, however.
I believe so.
That if you had a playoff MVP.
20 years removed from my hockey writing.
Can I say something about the NHL as a real quick aside?
I love that you're raising your hand.
Yes. I'm usually in these rooms by myself. By the way, I did 50.
That's a different podcast.
I did 50 radio interviews last Thursday and Friday to promote the book.
LeBron Inc. On bookshelves now.
One on top of the other, on top of
it's
the other.
It's on Amazon.
And
you can buy it.
I was gesturing in the room like this. I, last week, was here. Maybe it was last time I was here. It was in the morning. I was having breakfast in the hotel restaurant. And it was 9 in the morning. And a series of very well-dressed, $3,000 suit, very healthy, strong, strapping young men with long hair kept walking in and going into a private room. Mm-hmm. And I go, those guys don't get together in nature. This group has been assembled. And it was clearly not a basketball team, okay? Because they're all like 6'3", not 6'8". And I go, that's got to be a hockey team. And it was the Vegas Golden Knights. Mm-hmm. But this is in the morning, like on a Wednesday morning, and they're like all totally in their suits. So one of the players introduces himself to me. He's an NBA fan. Mm-hmm. Says hello. I go, do you guys have to wear suits to your morning skate? And he goes, yeah, our general manager is old school. We have to wear
George
full
McPhee?
Suit. That's right. Former Capitals. Which I respect. Can you imagine in the NBA if players had to wear suits to shoot around?
I mean, yeah, but there was a time before the dress code where if you had said, can you imagine if the NBA, if players had to wear, and then you described what players wear into games now.
To games.
You would say, right, but even then you would have said, there's no way you're getting players to wear that stuff to games. And what happened was the particular generation of players who came in under the dress code, not the ones who it was imposed upon, but who came in under it, said, oh, I'm going to turn this around to work for me. I'm going to turn this into basically a catwalk so that I can, A, get free stuff, and B, then get endorsements, and have turned it into a huge business, basically.
Well, it was quite the show. I'm sorry I got off track there, Producer Andrew Hong. Where were we?
We were on it. You're just trying to deflect from best season, most valuable, and why that would be a better way to evaluate people. And yes, I do think having a playoff award as opposed to just a finals award might be an interesting way to do it. And this isn't all just ways to give out more awards. It's just deciding, hey, what are we actually voting on? And I get it. I get sort of like, oh, it's better that not everyone agrees on the criteria. Create spirited debate. And that's the way it's always been. But it's not the way it's always been because of the rise of analytics, because of the rise of video and the way we analyze and game tracking and all the stuff, tools that we have. Those tools have more heavily weighted different categories of things. It is not the same as it used to be. And so now we are basically judging on who has had the best technical offensive season. That is what the MVP has turned into. And I am very curious to see what happens with this year's vote, because it's funny, James Harden was on one side of that debate few years ago. He's going to be on the other side of that debate this season, where you could argue that, yeah, there were months that he wasn't as good as Giannis, and there are things that he's not as good as Giannis at, but his value to the team and the dreaded N-word, the narrative, but all that stuff's real about when they needed him most, when the chips were down, blah, blah, blah. And we don't give awards for that stuff anymore.
As you talked about on the jump today, you've said it before, Giannis's defense has to count for something.
Yes, and that is ultimately
James
what...
James is a bad player. No. It's not to say he's a bad defender. He is much better than he used to be, but he is not Giannis on defense. But getting back to the Sixers, if they keep this team together, assuming that J.J. Redick takes just a representative contract and Ben Simmons extends for the max, which I'm sure is what he'd want, you're looking at not in one season, but you're looking at investing $400 million.
Do you think J.J. Redick's back, though? He almost didn't come back this season.
I know. Good question. Well, I was thinking they make a run in the playoffs. You know, I mean, by the way, like J.J. Redick is a guy that like the Lakers should be looking at.
Of course.
You know, that's the type of player, you know, as everybody thinks that they're going to go after and, you know, get, you know, maybe they do get a star. Maybe really, really what I think might happen is Tobias Harris is younger, healthier. Fits really well with sort of the modern NBA.
You gave up more for him.
You gave up multiple first round picks. and you say, here's your 5-year offer. And then Jimmy says, where's my 5-year offer? And they go, well, Jimmy, we'd like to offer you 3. I'm just totally spitballing. Mm-hmm. And the Lakers come in and they have to make a decision. Do they offer Jimmy Butler a 4-year max and ride with Jimmy and LeBron as your team? Two guys in their 30s. Mm-hmm. Or do you say, let me go try to sign J.J. Redick. Let me go try to sign Danny Green. You know, Danny Green's an unrestricted free agent. Classic type of player that would be great with LeBron. You know, or, you know, that to me is a Jimmy Butler. The Jimmy Butler question is a big question for Philly and for other teams as well. And, like, I know one thing. If I was Philly, I was really glad Jimmy Butler was on my team in that game one.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I mean, look, we talk about who's a playoff. Who are the 82-game players and who are the 16-game players? Draymond's been talking about that a lot lately. Who's a playoff player? I mean, Jimmy Butler's a playoff player. Kyrie Irving is fantastic in the regular season, by the way. It's not like he's not a regular season right. player. But, man, playoff Kyrie, I know you are a devotee of that theory more than anyone. Yeah.
I feel like he had a lot of incredible playoff games that may have been covered up because he was on LeBron's team.
First thing he did in game one of that game against Indiana was so beautiful to watch. I'm sorry. That was amazing. And it was just sort of in the first 10 seconds of when he had the ball in his hands. It was amazing. Yeah, fantastic. You know,
I think he had 3 or 4 40-point games, at least 3.
But, of course, you bring up Jimmy Butler's health. This is a guy who played for Tibbs in one city or another for, I think, 8 years. Am I doing that math right?
Whatever it is, it felt like 8.
Right? And he, if he is smart, the best thing for his career, people were sort of mocking like, oh, you want to win, but you're willing to go to X city or Y city. If he is smart, what he needs to do is go to the team that is going to sign him for the longest contract for the most money. That is the smart thing for him to do because, yes, winning is great, but only one team wins the title every year, and his body is not likely to endure.
Which is
endure.
Why, you know, we talked about this off the air today. Damian Lillard is going to make All-NBA.
Yep.
He is going to be eligible for the Supermax contract.
Yep.
I think he's going to sign it, even if the Blazers lose the next 4 games and they have a third consecutive very big disappointment. I think he signed that contract because you're taken care of forever and you will be forever loved there, forever.
You just kind of have to decide. I think what's coming down to some of these guys like Kemba Walker, if he wants to sign the Supermax, if Damian would want to sign a Supermax, do you think you ever want to leave? Because as we have seen with Anthony Davis, especially for guys who are considered the nice guys around the NBA, to walk into the front office, to walk into the owner and demand a trade, it's hard, right? It's one thing for Jimmy Butler to do it, right? That's his whole reputation. That's his whole MO. And he loves being doubted.
I know,
loves being unpopular.
It's very strange.
Loves being booed. Doesn't care about all of that. I'm going to come in, whatever. It was against type for Anthony Davis. We can debate whether or not it was smart of him. He sees it as taking control of him, of his career. I actually understand a lot of that more than I think a lot of other people around the league did, but obviously it was a huge public opinion loss, right? And Damian Lillard has talked so much about supporting Portland and liking being in Portland and what it stands for to be in Portland.
Great community there.
If he were to leave because his contract was up, because he was a free agent, and it was toward whatever stage of his career, and they hadn't won X number of times. There's certainly a model for fans being okay with players like that, saying, hey, you gave us your time. You gave us your prime of your career. Go win a ring somewhere. We'll still cheer for you. That is a lot different than going in and demanding for and asking for a trade. So I think for a lot of guys, yes, a Supermax will set them up forever, but the luxury of playing in this era of the NBA is Damian Lillard has a lot of money already. He gets a lot of money from Adidas. He has a budding music career, and I think that he should take a look and say, okay, am I really sure this is where I want to be for good? Because I don't think he's the type of guy who's going to walk in and ask for a trade, even though we've heard rumblings that he might be unhappy at different points over the last 2 or 3 years.
I think this year.
But he didn't do it, right? So even if – I don't know if it was legit or not. I didn't have that conversation with him, right. So I can't say if it was legitimate. But let's say it was. He still didn't go in and ask for a trade.
He did not.
So I think that, and he said all the right things publicly. So I think that guys at this stage, and it's funny, when they created the Supermax, Brian, You were my witness. What was the question I kept asking every player who came on our show that first year the CBA was passed? You tell me how much money is enough money. I would say, I don't know. For me, $2 million is a lot of money. So forget 20, forget the 200, right? For you guys, how much money is so much money you can't turn it down? Is this really it? And it's turned out it's not really it, right?
Paul George is almost the best guy to articulate this because he has turned down money twice.
Yeah.
If he had stayed in Indiana, he'd have probably gotten the Supermax.
Yep.
Because he would have been all NBA last year.
Yep.
He's all NBA this year for sure. And he could have got the full 200 some odd million. He asked for a trade, which invalidated that he couldn't get it. Comes to Oklahoma City, where he had a choice of taking a one-year contract or a five-year contract, which I thought was what his options were. He took a three-year deal.
Yep.
Because he wanted to have flexibility. And he's getting a lot of money, but he's basically saying, I am not voting with my pocketbook.
Yep.
I am voting with my happiness index. And I was stunned by it, but he is sort of the poster child for the new way of thinking in the NBA.
But I think it's interesting. I want to go, but I'm going to brag on our show, and this is you and me and T-Mac, that summer, we were all talking after they passed the CBA, and that was one of the big questions. It was, look, they're basically trying to bribe players to stay.
That's right.
That they are going on the model of sort of when Juwan Howard and Chris Webber and those guys signed those huge deals, right? And they got locked into these teams that they later didn't want to be on. And they're basically saying, if we bribe them enough, these guys will go for the banana in the tailpipe and they will want to stay. And the players basically looked at them over the next last 2-3 years from now and said, yeah, we see it. We're not interested. We've got enough money anyway.
And the one interesting thing is
Kyrie Irving could have been in line for a Supermax if he had stayed in Cleveland. Yeah. I mean, there are so many guys
Kyrie
we could
is
talk
going
about
to make
this.
All-NBA this year.
Yes.
If you want to really
Kawhi Leonard would have been was in line
was
for a Supermax. I mean, we can talk about
if you want to play it out. LeBron would have left
of guys.
Free agency probably. Yep. Kyrie would have been the leader of the Cavs.
Yep.
And he'd have been All-NBA this year like he's going to be for the Celtics. One thing that has not happened in the Supermax that I think is interesting. But first off, the owners wanted a franchise tag. They tried to get it in the last two CBAs. The same as the NFL. Like, you know, you slap it on somebody and you really can't lose them. And if it does, it would cost you 3 first round picks or something like that. The thing that they put in there that has not come into play yet is if you sign the Supermax, you're not eligible to be traded to anybody
for a
year. I think it's a year into your contract. So if you extend, like John Wall, say he's
So you think that it's when the contract actually kicks
in? I think so.
Oh, I didn't realize that. You would know better than me. This is
is a Larry Kuhn question or a Bobby Marks question. Anyway, what we haven't seen yet is a Supermax player ask for a trade.
Yes, correct.
That's going to happen.
Sure. Yeah.
Because basically what it is I'm taking the bag and...
Right. Although I would think it's look at John Wall. Like, it's hard to deal those players. It's not as if somebody with a Supermax contract, other teams are running.
Well,
to
think
snap
about
up.
Like, let's say Kawhi had taken the Supermax extension this year. See, and he was miserable. He would have had to wait. So
we have
only
seen,
a matter of time.
We have seen teams though wait for that clock to run out. Blake Griffin 6 months after being offered not a Supermax, but. That five-year deal.
DeMarcus Cousins.
Yes.
Basically, Sacramento was like, because he had a decent chance.
But Blake's the one who's the inverse of what you're talking
about.
That's
right.
Right? Blake is the one where they said, okay, 6 months, we can't trade him for 6 months. Hey, it's 6 months and one week. Detroit, what do you got going on?
That's right. Well, I think the interesting thing was there, they had a sort of a shift in their whole philosophy. But I will say this, for as mad as Blake was at the Clippers, he did get that massive contract. He got the 5 years.
And he, like so few other players in this league, was eligible for a no-trade clause with the Clippers. And the reporting at the time was that they would have given him the no-trade clause if he had taken a four-year deal. And much like we were just talking about Jimmy Butler, because of Blake's health considerations, he said, I want the max amount of time for the max amount of money. And the concession was that he had to not take a no-trade clause.
They traded him in six months. Which, it's very harsh, but at the end of the day, the 5 years was super important to him.
Mm-hmm.
and he got what he wanted.
And
so,
he's reportedly happy in Detroit.
Yeah, he had a great year. Very upsetting. You know, the Pistons, we'll go here in a minute because you have a meeting you're looking for.
I didn't know I had that meeting.
Oh. The Pistons just wanted to make the playoffs. That was like their owner. He's like, I just want to make the playoffs. I remember Dwayne Casey came to the Jump last year during the finals. He had been offered the Pistons job.
And I remember he did our show.
He did the show. And I remember him saying, it's a good job, but they really want to make the playoffs. I don't know if I can make it in year one. We're going to try. You know, he was on the fence. I think then they offered him like $7 million a year. And I think that changed his mind.
Yep.
But they made it. They made it. They finally made it. And,
what do you think that does for the fan base though? I mean, they lost by 30 plus. If there's four games of that.
That's the thing. Like, I wonder
what that building would look like for game four.
You know, everybody says they don't want to be in the middle. Their ownership just really wanted to get in.
Yeah, that's good. Yay.
You know, like last year with the Timberwolves. They just wanted to get in. Okay, Andrew says that's enough. All right, Rachel, thank you for
stopping by. Thanks for having me. This is fun.
We have a good, fun, long week at the Jump this week with playoff games every day.
Yep.
This is what we work for all year long.
Can we pub Brian's book one more time? How many times has it been pubbed on the Hoop Collective podcast? Six times? Seven times? Let's make it an even eight.
Yeah. How long? I did like the Blitz all last week. I was in New York, did the whole thing.
If you're still listening at the end of this podcast and are not an owner of this book, you should be ashamed of yourself. Go to the web, buy the book. That's all I have to say. Go to your local bookstore if you have one.
Thank you very much. Listen to the audio book, which I did not read.
Ooh. Who did?
A very talented audio artist named Chris. I can't remember his last name.
He's amazing. I love him. I don't remember his name.
I had pneumonia in February.
I remember.
There was no chance of me reading that book. Also.
Oh, how did we not talk about your eardrum?
Yeah.
Okay, like 2 seconds. Two more seconds. Poor Andrew, who's trying to do me a favor and get me to my next meeting that I didn't even know I had. Please explain to America what happened to your eardrum.
It burst.
But wait, you text us. We have a group of friends. You text us saying my eardrum burst.
Yes.
And I'm sitting here like, that's not a casual thing. Does your eardrum grow back? Do you just not have hearing in that ear?
No,
anymore?
I have hearing. It bursting was the best thing that could happen because the pressure was building up so terribly.
Okay, but burst implies like skin that is no longer there. No, eardrum. Just, what is your eardrum made out of? Cartilage that is no longer there?
I don't
there?
Know. I mean, I don't want to gross people out, but.
It's too late for that.
I had, I had like this pressure in my ear and I was like, I should probably go get this checked out.
So did your eardrum really burst or are you just saying that like the pressure relieved?
There's a hole in it. What do you want me to say? I mean, it's perforated.
So what does this mean for your long-term ear health?
I actually had this happen to me about 12 years ago and you go in and they decide whether or not they have to put a patch into it or not. But right now we're going to leave it burst. Because it's the playoffs.
Because it's playoffs and you're playing hurt. Gosh darn it.
And I had to fly out here yesterday.
Right. And so you don't want more pressure building up.
That's right.
So
it was actually wonderful.
Wow.
A wonderful flight.
I appreciate you taking one for the team. You're like, it's like you're like Ronnie Lott. You like cut off one of your fingers so that you can come out and do the Jump this week.
I had pneumonia in February. Went to the All-Star game with pneumonia. Fought through it. Lost my voice on the podcast. Out here with a burst eardrum.
Man.
For your show.
I don't even know how to put a bow on that. Andrew?
Thank you for listening to the Hoop Collective podcast. Thank you to Rachel Nickel. Thank you to Andrew Hahn. We'll be back later in the week with Tim McMahon and Jackie McMullen, if McMahon isn't banned before now and then. Your guess is as good as mine. That's why he'll make it.